Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Another one of the biggest problems facing people of African descent inside the United States today is the fact that many of us are unemployed, and then a lot of us are on jobs. But the biggest thing that we should be concentrating on now is to getting to our own enterprises and begin to network with each other, and to concentrate on transforming our money into wealth. Visit Tahaka. Powernomics.net. That's www.tahakapowernomics.net. Sign up for the Platinum Plus Matrix. Contact me, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Very, very powerful opportunity for you to take back your communities. Take control of your life. Be in position to be a have more instead of continuing to be a wish more.
Welcome, Morris. Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and this evening we will be dealing with, do we trust each other in business? Now, that's a very, very fair question, and we're going to try to get down in here this evening and see if we can get all that answered for us. We're going to be dealing with the following question. What prevents us from uniting in the United States? What is it that's preventing us from doing that? What should we do first? Should there be a violent revolution in America? What part does business play among so-called black people in America? What is the business and monetary solution? And last but not least, what is missing? Now, these are only a few of the questions that I could put up in the block, because I couldn't put everything up in there, so I took the liberty of writing some stuff out. And I want to go over these things here with you this evening. But first of all, let me start out by saying, for those of you who haven't gotten a hold of my free articles yet, go to www.tahakapowernomics.net and just fill out the little slip down at the bottom of the page, and it will come to me, and I'll send those documents to you as an attachment and an email, okay? That's www.tahakapowernomics.net. .com, T-A-R-H-A-K-A, Powernomics.com, and I'll get that for you. I'll put that up in the chat room so that you all can go directly there if you are looking for our free articles, The Commerce Game and How to Play, The 14th Amendment Exposed, U.S. Bankruptcy and the Moors, Secrets of America, and my ebook is all there. Go ahead and put your information in the little box at the bottom and click send. That comes straight to me. We get it straight to you in the email attachment, okay, with the quickness. Now, I want to talk to you all about this subject here, because I'm looking at this situation inside the United States, and we have brothers and sisters across the country that's determined to spend their money somewhere else, when they have restaurants and places of business right there in their own community that is not, there's no lines at the door. The place is not packed. And it can't be for us having a lack of money. You know, we hear a lot of people say, well, you know, ain't no job, man. We ain't got no money and all this right here. But I can't go along with that. I mean, you know, I'm seeing the brothers ride by, man. They got chrome rim. They got brand new paint jobs on the car. They got on Nikes. They got on Fiats. And, you know, they got season tickets to the game. And, you know, if I go out in Walmart, is it, you know, it's like 75% of the people in there look like us. And we got brand new hairdos every week. I go around the corner. There are some Asians that own the little stores around the corner. And they have a steady flow of traffic in and out the door all day long. With women walking in the place and coming out with a bag of hair and getting in the car and driving off. And, you know, so I'm wondering, what is this thing? What is it? I made an attempt to hold a conversation with a young lady this morning, which ended up being a disaster. And she tried to convince me that being multicultural is a benefit for us, and that if you do anything, it should be open and available for everybody. And, you know, if you open a daycare center, then you should have everybody in there. And I asked her, I said, well, I'm looking at the Asian hair store. It's open for everybody. They got a dollar. I said, but the only people I see going in there are people looking like us. I have yet to see any Asian walk in there and get by hair and walk out. I haven't seen it. In 11 years, I haven't seen it. I have seen absolutely no Caucasian at any point in time in history walk in there and walk out with some hair. I haven't seen it. And it seems to me that when I go in the Chinese restaurants and look in the back, the only people I see back there is them. And I'm trying to wrap this around my brain about the multiculturalism among us. You know, why is it that the only people that have that philosophy is us? Because everybody else I see, they are keeping the wealth in their communities, and they are holding on to their dollar. You know, the so-called Jewish people, they transfer money among themselves, and but it seems that we want to patronize everybody but us. The sister went on to tell me that there's a lot of multiculturalism going on in our community, and I said, yes, I agree. She said, there's a benefit because we have a whole lot of stores. We have McDonald's, we have Wendy's, we have Burger King. And I was trying to understand her thinking, because she seemed to think that because these particular businesses are in her neighborhood, that some kind of way she is benefiting. I didn't understand that, so I was forced to go ahead and hang up early, because that kind of thinking was quite disturbing to me. However, we're going to deal with, I got some more questions here. How can I trust you if you don't respect yourself? Now, that's question number one. Number two is, how can I respect you if you don't respect yourself? Why should I buy something from you when you spend your money with everyone but your own kind? Why should I respect you when you have never told me anything about what you know and can prove about your own self and culture and Asian story? Why should I invest in you if you don't even invest in your own self? Why should I trust you in you when you don't trust in your own prosperous future? If you attack your own kind, why should I trust you? How in the world can I respect or trust you if you won't even wear your own hair and nails? How can I respect you if you date or marry outside of your race? How can I trust you when you embrace everybody, culture, food, and customs, and do nothing about your own? Can I trust you and respect you if you believe and promote multiculturalism? How can I trust you when you disrespect your own woman or man? Why should I respect you or trust you if you believe in another nation's religion? This is just a list of questions that I compile, and I'm hoping tonight that some folks would call in and help me answer some of these questions. I'll go over some of them if you need me to. I will go over some. But the question of us trusting each other enough to go into business with each other, I think that's something that we need to start dealing with. You know, now, I am a firm believer that no people can have any cohesiveness at all if they are disconnected from their ancient roots, their ancient story, their ancient customs, and their ancient culture. I don't think it's possible, because I have conducted many experiments. I have planted plants. They have grown. I pull the plant up. I cut the root off the plant. I replanted the plant, put the root on the side, watered it, fertilized it, everything. But the plant never grew, and it died. So we have Korean people inside the United States that is connected to their culture. As a result, they are successful. We have Chinese people inside the United States who are connected to their culture. Result, they are successful. We have Jamaican people. They have restaurants all over America. They are connected to their culture. They are respected. They are successful. We have, what else we got? We got Japanese people inside the United States. They have restaurants, flea markets, they buy up stuff. We have Cubans, we have Haitians, we have a lot of different people who are connected to their culture. They are successful, point blank. Okay, now, let's take a look at the Negro, the colored man, and the black man in America who is disconnected from his culture. Let's look at him collectively and see if he's successful or not. I mean, I feel like that's fair. I mean, if we're talking about people being connected to their culture and all of this good old stuff, then let's take a look at us and see if anybody can tell me why. Is it that we, being disconnected from our culture, is not successful? Why are we not? What's our problem? I got a call in here on the line. I'm opening up in regards to the question that I'm asking. Area code 706. Could you tell me who you are, where you're calling from, and what's your question in regards to the topic tonight?
Hi, Brother Tucker. This is Scott from Georgia. My question tonight is, as far as the culture for the Moors, what is the culture for the Moors as far as the dietary guidelines, way of worship, and education as far as children? Do Moors, what do Moors eat? What don't they eat? Are Moors supposed to homeschool children or send them to public school, or is it basically anybody can do what they want to do? As far as spirituality, is there a certain way of worship, or is there different gods or different religions? Do you have to be Christian or Muslim or.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna attempt to answer that question. But what I want to get from you right now is, based on what you know, what is it that you can tell me about the questions you asked?
Well, as far as the dietary, I don't know a lot about what more, you know, the vegetarian, like I know the Seventh-day Adventists, they have a culture based, a dietary culture based on vegetarianism. As far as Moors, I really don't know what they eat. As far as religion, spirituality, I know there were Moors that were Muslim, and there were also Moors that were Christian. So, I mean, there's, you know, there's no certain set guideline for that. As far as education, I think some Moors homeschool. Some Moors have schools, and some Moors go to public schools. So that's, I don't see any. I could be wrong. So that's what, I don't know much. So I'll put it to you like that.
Okay. Well, the way I look at it, when you say Moor, you're talking about a people who have gravitated toward a nationality. We're talking about a nationality. Now, based on what I see and what I have experienced among Moors, there's a various dietary things that I see a lot of Moors do. However, I see a lot of Moors who are just strictly vegetarians. I know a lot of Moors who specifically homeschool their children. I see a lot of Moors who deal specifically with Islam. And this is what I see. And that will have to be the answer to the question that, as far as the Moors are concerned, I can only tell you what I have seen and what I have witnessed. I've had shows on this blog talk where the Moors specifically told us what they did, how they homeschool their children, and the things that they eat, the things that they believe in, and stuff of that nature. Yeah. But what I'm dealing with here this evening is a generalization of people of African descent inside the United States, regardless of whether they have gravitated or have even did anything to determine whether or not they had a nationality, or whether they even took the time to investigate that. I want to look at the overall conditions of where we are in an attempt to determine if there is any way that we can solve the dilemma that we're facing here inside the United States. Now, I do know that we have famous brothers and sisters that are quite wealthy, but you know, when I the last time I looked, I don't know what they're doing now, but the last time I looked, I seen Oprah Winfrey on television, and all of her guests were Caucasians. Then I seen what's his name, that guy, Magic Johnson. He looked it like me, but he seemed to belong to another race some kind of way in his brain. And I see quite a few people like that. I look at Travis Smiley, but it seemed like something disconnected is there some kind of way. You understand what I'm saying? And then I look at them according to the wealth that they have, and I look at the overall conditions of the people that look like them inside the United States, and nothing is changing. The neighborhoods across the country is in shambles. I looked at Michael Jackson. I looked at him when he was young, as a young man, growing up, and then all of a sudden, he seemed to appear to be something else or someone else from another culture. And so I'm wondering, you know, what is this thing inside the brain of the people of African descent that's causing them to feel like they have to adopt the culture of another race, put somebody else's hair on top of their own head with hair on top of it, and put somebody else's fingernails on the top of their own fingers when they already got nails, I'm trying to find out what's going on inside of the brain to cause a person to do these things. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. It kind of goes along with what I asked, but so the main thing you're saying is, like, if someone is an American black and they decided to not join but convert to being a Moor, there are no set cultural guidelines. It's more of a social order than it is a cultural paradigm. So becoming a Moor would not give you any, say, like, you wouldn't have to dress a certain way or eat a certain way. You could do your own thing just as you were doing before.
Well, once again, what we're talking about when you mentioned Moor, we're talking about a nationality. Now, what I'm looking at is the fact that when somebody tell me Moor, when you use the word Moor to me, the only thing, based on what I know and what I've studied, is people of African descent. That's it. I don't know anything about someone that is what they call an Arab being a Moor. I don't know anything about it. But I do know that the stories and the studies that I do have, it was about people of African descent. So when you say Moor, we're simply talking about what they categorize today as black, when you use the term Moor, and we look at the word nationality. But what I'm trying to do is look at not only Moor, but anybody else inside this country that looks like me, of ancient African descent, because prior to us, those who did come here against their will had a culture before they got here. And so, you know, where is that culture today? Because I know that everybody else that I see is connected to their culture, and I'm trying to find out what it is that is so bad or so evil or so wicked that makes us be ashamed to connect to our own culture. And I do that because I embrace what I know about me and my ancient story. And I can't wait to tell it sometimes. I would love to get on the floor in the Supreme Court or get on the floor before the Pope and tell the truth and ask him to go in his archives and bring out anything that can dispute what I just told him about the most magnificent species of race of people on earth. Now, brother, let me go on to the next caller right here. Everybody's hitting the switchboard. So I'm going to go down the line. Air code 215. Come on in, 215. Hey, man, let me have it.
What's up, brother?
Everything fine, brother. What's going on?
Yeah, whole tip and all that stuff. Assalamu alaikum and praise the Lord and all. Whatever y'all are, I'm saying hi to all y'all. Okay.
Okay.
Y'all.
All right. Yeah. What's on your mind, man?
Do you believe that these so-called Jews are running these stars, our black stars? They're keeping the black stars from spending their money with the people that look like them, you know. And I wonder if these so-called Jews, so-called, I call them so-called, but they're not really Jews, they're imposters, crackers.
Okay.
But I believe they're part of the Illuminati, and they control the wealth of the black men who's making this money, and I believe they're telling them not to do nothing with your people, but do it with the white people. As a matter of fact, take our daughters. You know what I mean? Look at Tiger Woods, all of them. Got white women, married them, going with them, got babies by them. You know, they're not spending money in the hood, so where they spend the money at? Look at Iverson. He done ran wild with money, and now he's broke. You know, man was damn near crying because he realized he was a fool with money. You know, so I need these jigs to hold our stars back from spending the money because it is their money, but they got to play for it. But I guess they have some kind of hold on these guys, and it's making them, you know, not support their own people. So do for self, it's not going to come from them because if they would have done it by now, you know.
I have to agree with you. I found out that these guys and what they're doing is they're signing contracts, and if they do anything to attempt to contribute to the uplifting of their own race inside the United States, they will come under severe attack. And their wealth will be taken away. They'll probably even be killed. One thing I found out is what we have to realize as a people inside this country is we have been designated as a permanent underclass of people, and we are responsible for the livelihood of everybody in this country except us. See, I could say, I want to open up an all-black daycare. Well, the first thing will happen is I'll become under attack. Well, you know, why it got to be all-black? You know, if you open a daycare, it should be for everybody. You know, you shouldn't be – that's being racist. That's being a prejudice, in it, you know. But now,
The main thing is if you do that, you have to get some qualified people who are not freaks or tricks or whatever fooling with these kids because they think you're looking for a lawsuit. They want to sue your butt because you touched my child or something, you know what I mean? So everything got to be in order where everything is straight and on the narrow.
Okay. Hold on, bro. Let me go ahead and open up this other line here. Area code. Let's see here what we got here now. There you go, 111. Tell me who you are, where you calling from, what's your question or comment? 111.
Good evening. My name is Sylvester. I'm calling from Las Vegas, Nevada. And I listen closely to when you speak and a few of the callers speak. And perhaps it's just my critical mind, the way my critical mind thinks. But I hear things sometimes because I just don't accept anything from anyone. I have to process it and think about it myself. Just because someone says it's so, I'm not the type that believes it, okay? I'm a reasonable man, but I'm also a man with a high level of discernment. When I was hearing you speak a few minutes ago, you were speaking of a nation. But then you said this nation was only of people of African descent. And that wouldn't really be a nation. That would be more of an ethnicity instead of a nation. A nation can encompass and can open its – wow, somebody lives by a train too? That's unique. I live close to a train. Usually you hear the
train
by where I live.
I want to destroy it.
I
want it off the track.
Nah, you get used to it after a while. But no, you may hear the train come by here in a few moments. That's all. Perhaps that's just my critical mind at work. There is some truth to when black celebrities or black athletes, that they're steered a certain way. But nothing really genuinely. Now, they may be stopped from speaking out. Or they may be frowned upon them speaking out on issues that would affect, you know, for instance, Trayvon Martin. Some cross the line with that. But as far as the overall betterment of black people or speaking to the concerns, the needs of black people. The fact of the matter is once people rise out of their circumstance, if they come from a certain underprivileged circumstance, they have a tendency to forget about the people that they've left behind. That's a reality, and they are discouraged. However, I don't think anything's in there contractually that would stop them. That would stop them from speaking out, from saying, doing, or contributing. I just think people really just don't care. I really think they just don't care. Nothing is stopping them contractually. Now, a person with endorsements, corporate endorsements, yes, they don't want that person being controversial. So that person is not going to be speaking out on matters of politics, matters of social justice. You're just not going to hear from them. And when you would, yeah, they would be silenced. They would lose endorsements. And I don't think the way the celebrity or athlete is bred today, they seem to be more concerned with themselves. Well, I know they're more concerned with themselves and what's going on in their world, and not too concerned about the betterment of, it's I got mine, you get yours. But I don't think it's anything that's done contractually.
Okay.
I would hope that as a group, that when we have these meetings of the minds, so to speak, and sharing our thoughts and ideas, that we would hold each other to a level of truth. Now, there's one thing to have an opinion, but there's some things that are said in these type of forums that are just unfactual sometimes. I'll give you an example, okay? I was listening to a show on BTR yesterday, and the brother tried to break down the word entertainment, okay? He broke down the word enter to go into, and then he said tainment. And what he said is, that you enter into being tamed, T-A-M-D-D, and then he spoke in an analogy of a wild animal being brought into captivity and being tamed. I said, hold on a second, brother, I think you have that wrong. The way that word is spelled is entertainment, T-A-I-N-D-D. He said, no, it's spelled entertainment, E-N-T-E-R-T-A-M-E-D, and I corrected him. Not only did he get offended, okay? All right, this is the truth.
Wow.
And it's archived. Not only did he get offended, but there were two or three other people that were on the panel at the time, and no one would just say, hey, no, I think you've got this wrong. No, he was a younger guy, probably in his 20s or 30s, and he just got that all wrong. And I just would hope that we hold each other to a higher standard.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Do we trust each other in business, in your opinion?
Hell no. I don't trust anybody in business. Business has to be, and I do business and been doing business for a long time. Trust is earned. Trust is earned.
Okay.
I don't trust anybody in business, and no one should. No one should. This is business. This isn't about trust. It's about business. Right. Now, that's real. Don't trust anybody in business. Business to be earned. And if something is complex enough, you can draw a written agreement.
Okay. Well, what do
and
you
enforce
think
that agreement if it's violated?
The people, what do you think prevents us from uniting inside the United States and acting collectively?
I don't think the so-called Jews, the Ashkenazi Jews, the imposter Jews, they may act collectively. Okay, they're a small group. I don't think other groups are as cohesive as we seem to think. Now, we may be a little more afraid, or a lot more afraid, but this constant call that I hear for black unity, people disagree on things, and their disagreements, a lot of time it transcends their ethnicity or their group. For instance, you may feel. That if a person is struggling and down and out, that they need a helping hand of some sort, whether it be from the community or the government. And I may feel that person needs to work their way through it and to develop some skills, and that this would build them, build some character. We have different ways of approaching things. So there's not going to be a unanimity or a consensus of thought all the time. And that's just a human condition. I think that we're people are a little bit too hard on themselves of expecting this from the black community, and I think that we think or say, I hear all the time, the Mexicans stick together, and the Indians stick together, and the so-and-so stick together, and the white people stick together. I don't know if it's as true as what you think. Organizing a group
What is it that is making these people, because I pass by their businesses and they're all in businesses and stuff, and I'm looking at their wealth position compared to us. So what is it that's keeping us?
What people are you speaking about?
I'm talking about, okay, over here where I am and down here in Florida, I went down there, I see the Haitians on their community, I see the Cubans on their own, practically almost the whole city. Up here where I am, up in Jacksonville, we see the Koreans have multiple businesses throughout the city.
I'll answer that. And you got here. I'm sorry to cut you off. You have three separate dynamics in each of those communities, okay? And it's not all the same thing. Koreans are clannish. They're incredibly clannish. I lived in Los Angeles for many years. I've been around Koreans. They're extremely, extremely a tight-knit clan. And they don't even mix. It takes a few generations for them to even start intermixing with folk. And it's rare that I see Koreans marry outside of their nationality. Haitians that come here were poor and never want to be poor again. We're poor, poor people, generally speaking. And there are opportunities here that don't exist in Haiti. So you see people fighting their hardest not to be poor. The Koreans, not necessarily so. Maybe some, but no, they're very clannish. And the Cubans that you speak of, these Cubans were upper crust successful people, however they did it, by hook or by crook in Cuba. So it's been instilled in them throughout generations. So each group has a different dynamic, and that's generally speaking. But these Cubans were successful.
What is our problem?
I don't know. I don't know. Well, we were driven apart. We were driven apart. I went to go to the movies yesterday. I saw 12 Years as a Slave, and I wish I hadn't seen it because it's very disturbing, and it's brutal, but it's real. It's real. If you haven't seen it, and if you know you're going to be bothered, you're going to be upset, but it's real. If you want to show your kids or younger people a history lesson that you think that they're not getting, we need to know where we come from, and we've come from, and what was happened then is that you would see atrocities being committed, and people just stood by and let it happen. Fear has been instilled in black people. A fear.
Well,
a real fear.
Well, one thing I found out, and this is something that I did for my own self, and sometimes I think I'm an oddity because I guess then again I have to also see how I was raised and brought up. My grandfather, my great-great-grandfather, these men were master fishermen, master trappers, master hunters, and cold-blooded killers. So the fear that you're talking about, it's very, very difficult for me. And so when I run across it in other people, even as a child, I had a hard time with it. And so today
you.
It's not
in your bloodline. You weren't raised like that. You didn't witness that. That's not your experience.
But what I'm saying is, I can't understand why. Okay, if you got some fear, just get rid of it. You know,
not everybody's that strong. A lot of people
like
to go along.
Look at it as, I don't look at it as being a strength. See, to me, I don't look at it as being a strength. It's just, to me, it's just normal. I could go, you know, and I'm just talking about, I can only talk about what I know for a fact.
Comes naturally for
I
you.
Had,
and I go ahead.
I look at my my brothers, and all of us are the same. You know, I hear people, and I don't understand this. I can't understand this to save my life. Why? You got Caucasian police officers across the United States shooting little so-called black boys down in the streets. And the first thing coming to my head, where's his daddy? Where he at? I can't understand that. You can't, what? Then I see these grown men get on TV after this done happened to their child, and they're talking about, they're doing an investigation, and we're gonna seek justice. And what are you talking about? What are you talking about? I don't understand that. What kind of skills do you have? Let me get off of that, brother. I'm going on and
let me answer your question. Let me answer your question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Why you can't understand? I know why you can't understand. And in order to understand, you have to really accept and realize that people are unique and they're different, and that everyone is not going to be like you, think like you, or act like you, or behave or respond like you. And once you understand that people are different than you, and that you are probably unique in your upbringing and the way that you conduct yourself and the way that you live your life. And that's okay. That's fine. But it's unrealistic to expect others. It's unrealistic, and it's just not going to – you're not going to find people that are like yourself. You're not going to find people that are like yourself, particularly if you are an oddity. An oddity doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. You just can't understand because they're not like you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I say I have to agree.
That's all it is. That's all it is. Thank you for letting me speak. I'll listen from here in.
Okay, brother. I'm opening up another line. I thank you for coming on. Area code 215. Tell me who y'all, where you calling from, what's your question or comment?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, he's loud and clear, brother.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think he was raised a little different from the inner city people. You know, it's a different thought pattern. And if he would come in my hood and just look at his people and wonder why everybody is different. You got some good, you got some bad, and you got some devils, you know. And that's the conditioning, you know, that life comes through. If it's their parents or through their genes. But then you got the good black man who sees a different picture, the way it used to be. And he wants to do all he can to help somebody or his people mainly to do better. And this is what's happening now. You got, I'm going to say maybe like out of 100, maybe like half and half now. People start waking up to understanding that there's a consciousness out here now. They're building, and they're taking hold of it. But there's 50% of them that's still out there doing things that they're not supposed to be doing to each other. And that's a major problem with us, as black people. We attack each other like we're enemies. But
well, I have to agree. I have to agree with that, but I've always had a philosophy growing up, and because I've been fighting all my life. But if I knew, I could. Because I remember one day, my kid's mother, she called me and told me that a man was bothering her, and every time she come out the house, he's harassing her. I said, I'd be over there in 5 minutes. So I got up, and I went over there. And I went to the house and said, where he at? She said, he down there on the corner, standing up down on that corner. And he got on that red shirt. So I went down there, and I was about to see him down there. I see, and when I looked at him, at this boy, I said, ain't no way in the hell he could whoop me. So I turned around, and I walked away. And I came back down there. I said, look, I said, next time he mess with you, I said, you tell him that I'm gonna get him. And she said she told him, and I said, didn't bother with her no more. But I've never been the type to, if it was a gorilla, then I'm going toward the gorilla. But if it's if it ain't nothing, then it ain't nothing.
Right.
But the thing that disturbs me the most and the brothers and stuff that I see, and I always despised, and I don't know why I despise it so much. I despise weakness in men. I can't stand it. It bothers me so bad it makes my bones rattle. I don't understand that, man. I don't know.
When I see things like that too, man, you know, I get so mad, my blood pressure get high, and then start biting my teeth and gums. I ready to move out on that, you know what I mean? But a few times I did. Nasty guy at one time. He was talking to this female, you know, and I seen the whole thing, how it went down. They wasn't together. He happened to come over there for a cigarette. And I don't know what she said to him, but whatever she said to him, and she stepped off. You know, I guess he didn't like the way she stepped off. So he, like, took his hand and put on the back of his shoulder, like, turn her or spin her around. So I hadn't seen it. I walked over there, you know, I stood like, maybe, like, about five feet away just to make sure, you know, it wasn't going no further than that. But she dealt with it perfectly, you know, because he said, well, I'm sorry. He apologized to her and said, I didn't mean to touch you or nothing like that. I just wanted to see if you did have a cigarette or not. And she said something about, I don't smoke. And I told you before, I don't smoke. So I guess he must have heard or something. So he had to make sure he got her attention. But he sure got my attention because I walked over there, you know, just mind my business. But if he had done anything, I would have tricked him or something, you know. Make sure, you know, he wasn't going to get away scot-free like that. Because I find myself every day like that, on guard, like I'm a guard, you know what I mean? I'm not a guard, but I see things, and I'm conscious now of who I am and what's going on in this world with this government, you know, and this Illuminati and these so-called Jews, you know, and it makes me mad when they try to compare themselves, these Jews, so-called Jews, with their Holocaust. Matter of fact, they got paid. That was our money they got paid for their little cheap-ass Holocaust. Excuse my language. I get mad, you know. But I do believe the money that America gave them Jews for their little shitty Holocaust, that was our money. See, they didn't know how to interfere with our money. You know, that's supposed to come to us. But so where is our reparations at? It never showed up or even talked about, you know, in a long period of time. So they got their little money, you know, for their little Holocaust. But see, it was those so-called Jews, they really not did crackers, but they took their position. Like they went over there and took their land over there in Jerusalem. But back here in America, in the South,
there was a company called King Cotton, the biggest cotton farm in the South, who had a bunch of slaves picking this cotton down there during that time. And this was a huge business where they had these ships coming off the sea, bringing in more Africans to pick this cotton. But those are the so-called Jews that had us out there picking that cotton. And this guy, King Cotton, is a Jew, Jewish people. It was all down in the South, but they was undercover saying they're Jews. They're not Jews. Because I believe that the minister put a book out saying, what's that book called? The Synagogue of Satan. Matter of fact, you can see it in the Bible, too. I think it's in John, and then again it's in Revelations. I think that's where it's at. You are not the Jews. You are the so-called Jews. And but I'm trying to say about King Cotton. King Cotton was the biggest plantation down in Tennessee, the big South down there. You know, they did all that hauling that cotton, making sheets and all kind of different things out of that cotton, and had us Brooklyn set up and set down. But those are the same people that call themselves the Jews today. They are the same exact people. They Caucasians undercover. And Mr. Farrakhan, I believe he was confronted with them at one time. They wanted to come meet him or something. And they tried to put him in line. And he told them to get the hell out of his place because he knew who y'all were. So, but they invited him to their place. I think he didn't go that time. But he put this book out called The Synagogue of Satan. You should get that book. Where they did a lot of slave trading down there. Took the baby from the mother, the black mother, and put them on the road, sold them to someplace else. See, this is why I believe we all are related in some way, because we're like, look, just like so-and-so. That could be your family, you know, because your features look so much alike. And there's a whole lot that going on back in themselves, you know, where people, the babies, the mothers, were having their children taken from them. And they moved like miles and miles away. So when the mother died and father died, the child is growing up. He don't know anything, you know. So today you like that boy look like so in the family, right? But then when you ask him, he don't know who you're talking about. But I believe there's a connection with this, you know. I really do, because every time I see somebody, mommy, somebody else, I'm like, you should be in that family, and they should be in your family, you know, because you're trying to put the pieces together,
brother.
I'm going to
have
you
know
to
go
what saying,
to a commercial break. I know exactly what you're saying. Let me get on this commercial break. Appreciate it, man.
Okay, brothers and sisters, listen up. If you got a problem with getting rid of your mortgage contract, if you're receiving anything in the mail from them, if you got a problem with student loans, banks, credit card companies, child support, the Internal Revenue Service, go to newfreehelpgroup.com. That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And when you get there, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we get you set up to get rid of the whole thing. www.newfreehelpgroup.com.
Okay, Morris, we back. We're going to get down into the meat and potatoes of this thing and dealing with this business aspect of this thing and find out what we need to start doing and get some see where we are now and what we need to be concentrating on here inside the United States of the people.
I was having a conversation with a brother yesterday, and we were talking about some things, and I even brought this up on the radio show. One of the reasons why the black community isn't respected. It's because a lot of us, not all, a lot of us don't realize we are in a position of begging people for stuff. We are in a position of wanting to be involved with other people's stuff instead of having our own. Do you realize that at this day and time, black people have achieved a whole lot? Yes, they have. Black people have the most money they've ever had in their life at this point in time. You had the most freedom that you ever had in this nation like you have this point in time. You even got Barack Obama as your president, okay? Many of the old people thought, and even me personally, thought that would have never happened in the United States of America, but it's happened twice already, okay? But in the midst of all that, Obama does great for himself or whatever. I'm talking about you. You understand something. Power respects power. And the reason why a lot of us in the black community isn't respected is because of our economic power. Now, black people have money. Black people not broke. You know why I'm gonna say you're not broke? Why every time iPhone come out, there's a bunch of black people in line to buy iPhone. Every time new shoes come out, there's a bunch of black folks in line to buy shoes, no matter if it's $200, $300. So you got money. You got the latest clothes on. I didn't even know the other day, because I don't wear expensive clothes, that Hollister shirts cost $60, $70. And I see a lot of black folks wearing that stuff. So you got money. Your cars look good. You spend money on that, you'll slap some $1,200, $1,300 rims on your ride. So you got money. It's not that you don't have money. It's the fact of the matter is you don't apply it to where you need to apply it to. And you need to do your research on Black Wall Street. On Black Wall Street, don't take away, and everybody want to talk about the destruction of Black Wall Street. I don't want to talk about the destruction of it. I don't even want to talk about the evil racism that was in the midst of the destruction of it. Throw that part away. I want to talk about what got Black Wall Street to where it's at, and that's what blacks need to move to now. Okay? You need to move more to self-sufficiency, business ownership, and investment. That's where you need to move to, black folks. Think about it. If at least 80% of you were business owners or at least had high-paying, lucrative careers in fields that nobody could run you out of, literally, it wouldn't even be no need for affirmative action whatsoever. If at least, and I'm talking to you brothers, and I'll get to you sisters in a minute, you brothers, if you get into business, at least for the things that black folks do, at least that much. Like, for instance, black people like putting rims on their car. Let's just be honest. Why don't you brothers be having tire shops, selling rims? There's nothing wrong with that. You see, I don't care if somebody say, well, stereotypical. I don't care what stereotype is. I see everybody driving around with rims. Black, white, Mexican, Asian, I see everybody. You brothers need to start opening up some rim shops. There's nothing wrong with that. You brothers need to start having your own shoe stores. Y'all always in line to buy a shoe store. You brothers always buying phones. Y'all got the latest phones. Why don't you open up some cell phone shops? Cell phones. You know what I'm saying? Y'all need to think more about business. Get into business. It's because when you have your own business, who set the rules? You. Who gonna fire you? Nobody. Because that's your own business. Nobody can tell you, well, you know, we're downsizing, so we have to let you go. No, because you be in business for yourself. And do you know when you in business for yourself, that is power, that is economic power. Think about it. If at least 80% of black folks was business owners, at least that much, do you know that it would be a total thought process change toward black people? Say, wait a minute, them black people, they got money all of a sudden. We got to approach these black folks different. And then it wouldn't just be Democrats that just come talk to us. It'd be Republicans as well, because they'd be trying to get our vote because, wait a minute, black folks are campaign donors now, big time, because they got all these businesses. You get what I'm saying? We need to create our own businesses. We need to invest. Instead of you spending a money on $300 pair of shoes and going to get you an iPhone, why don't you open you up an E-Trade, a SkyTrade account, and put the $500 in there, and you see all these slaves in the industry. I'm talking about when you stay in the long lines, it's like you're slaves in the industry. You're making Apple all this money. Why don't you buy Apple stock? You making Nike all this money. Why don't you buy Nike stock? Samsung, all the whatever ones. Why don't you buy stock into these companies at least? That way when all these brand new gadgets come out and you see them lines of people standing, you're like, oh, shoot. I'm good. Company making money. Stock going up. You can invest just as much as Mitt Romney invests. But you choose not to. You think Mitt Romney, of all people, all the millions he get, you think he started off with millions of dollars? No, he just learned the system and knew all the loopholes. That's what Mitt Romney did. You can do the exact same thing. America is a capitalistic society. You can do the exact same thing in the area of your money and finance. But we don't do that. We're afraid to invest our money. We're afraid. We're afraid to step out and own our own business. It's like some of you are afraid to even have a black person ahead of you in anything. You try to cutthroat them, try to undermine them, but you find with a boss that's white over you, a lot of you black folks. It's the truth. And don't say I'm lying about it. When you step out in the business for yourself, you're the boss, nobody else. It's a process, of course, to get there, but you get there. You work your job while you're building your business. Once your business is making way more money than your job, then you can walk away. You know what I'm saying? The last thing, don't you think it's offensive that other people groups are in your neighborhood running shop, but yet you go to their neighborhood and you're not there running shop? Don't you think that's like offensive and out of order, but you allow it? Let's get an example. Sisters, you're not offended that every shop that you go to buy weave, the Koreans own it? On every block they own weave? Why don't black women own that? All black men. Why is that? Wouldn't it be strange that if you go to a Mexican food or Chinese food restaurant and a bunch of black folks own it, and black folks is all working in there, but yet black folks are selling enchiladas and rice? Wouldn't that look strange? I mean, everybody runs their own stuff. You go to a Mexican food restaurant, Mexicans run it and own it. You go to the Chinese run it. That's what you're supposed to see. But no, in our community, we'll let the Koreans come in and sell weave. How the Koreans going to tell you as a black woman what's good hair or not? They don't wear it. So how could they even tell you? And sisters, you don't think that's out of line and out of order? How have we gotten to the point we let Koreans come into our community and sell you stuff for you? You supposed to own that. You supposed to shun them Koreans and open up your own. I ain't got nothing against Koreans. I'm just making a point. No, you're not. You don't own stuff in other people's communities. Well, why they owning stuff in yours? And you patronizing them at the same time. None of you sisters that got business degrees or brothers that got business degrees can't start selling weave. Get with somebody who's passionate about black women's hair and start selling weave. You can't do that? Yes, you can. Stop just buying weave and look to own that junk. There's nothing wrong with that. I remember when I heard them women on TV say they spent $700 on weave. I said, you know what? Let me finish doing what I'm trying to do right now, and I'm going to look into getting in the weave business. You can call me what you want. I'm going to look into getting into that weave business because there's a lot. If women are spending $700 on some weave, something that's temporary, and they go keep coming back to buy it, oh, I got to get involved with that. I'm going to research it once I get finished doing what I'm doing now, the business ventures I got going on. Because I'm sick of them Koreans owning stuff that belongs to us. That stuff belongs to us. Now, you have your opinion about weave you want. I don't care about your opinion. I'm talking about the business aspect of it. The sisters who want to wear it, that's them. It ain't nobody's business. If you ain't buying and putting the weave in their hair, don't worry about it. If you don't like a chick with weave, don't get one with a chick with weave. You're going to be one woman at a time anyway. Some of y'all dudes who are caught up on talking about weave, and y'all be still trying to get them chick pants with weave in their head. So this y'all just need some of that talk about weave get on my nerves. You know what I'm saying? That's just my personal opinion. But the point I'm making is y'all should get upset to the point that you want to take the market over. Black people need to get into more business ownership and investment and have economic power more than what you do. Because you have money. It's not that you broke. You got money. You just don't apply it where you should. And in that turn, that's how we're going to get our respect. Everybody likes to talk about Africa and the kings of Africa and Egypt. They had economic power. That's why they were respected. They wasn't begging nobody for anything. They was running stuff. And that's what we have to do in our cities and states. We have to get economic power by business and investment. Anyway, hit me up in the comments. Choose the commentary. Subscribe to the YouTube channel.
Okay, Morris. Listen up. Starting this Wednesday coming, Tahaga presents the online conference call. The call-in number to dial is 712-432-3100. The access code, 865-074. That's 712-432-3100. Access code, 865-074. Make sure you're there, lined up, 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Wednesday night at 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to deal with internet marketing. We're going to be able to converse with one another and so that we can get a lot of work done here in the United States. We're going to be dealing with your mortgage problems, your student loans, whatever it is. Dial into our Wednesday night conference call starting at 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The call-in number once again is 712-432-3100. Access code 865074. See you when...
In business, one brother said, no, I don't trust nobody in business. It ain't about trust, it's about business. Okay, all right. What I'm envisioning is with the new little business that I'm working with here now, the Powernomics Network, and we have gotten the MCA Platinum Matrix apparatus, and what that is designed to do is pay you an immediate income, give you a full benefit package, and also give you the opportunity to share the same apparatus with other people, and they can duplicate the same thing. So if we are networking, and I want to stop and say right off the bat, I congratulate the brothers and sisters that have joined my team and now are officially set up. They are out doing their thing. I had one sister a few moments ago. She sent me her website to look at, and I must say that she's got it set up and ready to go. We do a little bit of critiquing on that thing, and she's ready to go. So there is an opportunity for you to get in business, and this particular business that I'm talking about, because I'm a very, very busy man doing these broadcasts, doing the articles and stuff. I'm doing quite a few other things that I do, and I want to add that it's an opportunity for you with a minimal of effort. You can do well with this thing right on the internet if you want to. If you only spend just a few hours a day doing it, you can prosper. And what's more important to me is you get a chance to build a network. You get a chance to make other people who look like you, by the way, too, be successful as you go along. And that's one of the prerequisites of being successful, is you must make other people successful as you go along. So it is my duty to not only operate being successful with this thing and doing everything that I can to reach the maximum amount of people and put the opportunity in their lap, but also to work with them and make sure that they are successful as well. And it is a wonderful thing. You can get a chance to look at it. You can send for my free articles. Just go right over there to www.tahaka, T-A-R-H-A-K-A, powernomics.net, tahakapowernomics.net. Once you get there, you can send for your free articles. You can examine this thing. You can look at the video. It will explain the money side of this thing to you, how you get paid and all that stuff. And if you want to, and you can pick up the phone and call me. My number is right there on that page, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I'd be more than happy to answer any question that you have about that opportunity. If you're having problems with your mortgage, if you got problems with student loans, the Internal Revenue Service, if you have problems with banks, small companies, mid-sized companies, large companies, it doesn't matter, give me a call. Let me know what's going on so I can direct you to the solution to the problem, because my shows are solution-based. I don't just put out stuff just to talk about. I'm looking for a solution. I'm looking for a solution to this business thing that we're dealing with this evening, okay? This ain't just out here just for us to elaborate on and just have something to chew the fat about. I don't like chewing the fat, no way. You call me, let's get down. Let's tell me what's on your mind. Let's find out what the problem is. Once we've identified the problem, let's immediately start talking about the solution, okay? And that's what I do. I do that day in and day out. That's all I want to do. You know, I don't want to, you know, I ain't got no time. Don't call me, tell me nothing about what team play football. I ain't got time for that. I don't want to hear it. If you don't call me and ask me nothing about the Lakers. I don't know nothing about them. I don't want to know nothing about them. I don't know what's on TV because I don't watch TV. So if you got a concern and it's serious and it's business, give me a shout, and we can discuss it, okay? Now, as far as the questions and stuff that read off on the list that I had here at the beginning, why should I trust in you when you don't trust in your own prosperous future? I believe that if I ask a person, what's your outlook on life? What are you trying to accomplish? You know, how do you see yourself 5 years from now? What's your plan? What you got on paper that you're actually working on? Show me what you're working with right now. And they say, well, I ain't doing nothing. I ain't really thought about it that old. You know, you 40, 50 years old. That's to me, that's I ain't got time for that. Anyway, I think these are things that we should think about. I think before you get out of high school, I think that you should already have a vision of what you want to do with your life, or at least an inkling, and I think you should immediately begin to plan your future. Plan stuff. Put it on paper. Get you a we're moving toward the month of January now, so in the month of December, if they're available on shelves now, you should go get you a monthly planner for the year next year, 2014. Get that monthly planner and start planning. You know, if you know what you're gonna do Tuesday, what you're gonna do Monday. Write it down, execute it. You know, and you will find out that very, very quickly that if you have control of your lifestyle, but you are surrounded by other people who have no control of their lifestyle, it's going to interfere with your control if you let it. And everybody has a circle, and this is based on what I believe that I've experienced, based on what I've studied as well. Everybody got a circle, and whoever you let in that circle, when they come in that circle, they're going to bring everything in there that they got with them. If they got corruption going on, they're bringing it with them. If they're connected to unsavory people, they're bringing them with them. If they got cohesion, drama, chaos going in their life, they're going to bring it in there with them, you see. So you might want to consider being selective when you're dealing in your personal life with people. By asking questions, what's in your mind? What do you think? What do you believe? What do you have going on? What's your plan? Where you are now? What you going to do? What's your outlook look for the future? What do you want out of life? You know, and these are just some questions that you may want to consider asking people in dealing with them and being conscious of the fact of where you are going, so that you can continue to move forward. Toward your goals.
Okay? Everybody's a slave, black folk. And that's what a race was. A race, a contest started to develop the Western world. The rule was he who gets there first with the most slaves and make the most money will be the most powerful nation on earth. And the race began. Everybody was in the race to use black folk except black folk. And begin shipping blacks in to America. And they ship black folk in. they justified it initially by saying that it was an economic issue. Everybody knew it was an economic issue. It stayed an economic issue all the way from the 1500s up to the 1700s. In the 1700s, when the evangelical movement moved to this country, they switched enslaving black folk to make it a religious issue. Why? Because King James then wrote, when England took over the slave trade as the biggest one and started leading the slave trade and started winning the race, King James rewrote the Bible, called the King James Version. And even had, what's his name now? What's the writer? Huh? Shakespeare and the rest of them writing. All of them rewrote the Bible. And they rewrote the Bible, then since England was the dominating country for slaves, all the slave states were mandated to use scriptures to justify enslaving the black people. So religion then became a means of codifying slavery. And the slave owners started teaching black folk. Yeah, when you hear me talk about the master and the slave in the Bible, on earth, it's the white man is the master and you're the slave. And you're mandated to do three things. One, to accept your station in life. Two, to be humble and obedient. Three, to work hard, don't steal and don't lie. And lastly, to look for pie in the sky after death. And that stayed true up until about 1880. At that time, religion was the justification for slavery. This is important for you now. Slavery then moved from being an economic issue to a religious issue. It stayed a religious issue up until about 1859, again, on the eve of the Civil War. On the eve of the Civil War, a guy named Darwin, Charles Darwin, remember Charles Darwin? He wrote a book called The Survival of the Species, or The Survival of the Fittest. And what he's been doing, along with a lot of other pseudoscientists, was trying to connect a linkage between the lowest and the highest in life. What he was saying is that, is an amoeba that's small, is it greater or smaller than the elephant that's big? Is a blade of grass lower in the chain than a tree? And it kept setting up these vertical systems. They call them genuses and species, going from the lowest of everything to the highest. But by that time, the white society had successfully redistributed by 1860 almost 97% of all the wealth and power into the hands of the dominant white society. The race was nearly over by 1860 or 1859 when Charles Darwin wrote his book. And they looked around and said, look, they're white. Now let's get to human beings. We worked out the relationship between between a bush and a tree and an amoeba and an elephant. But look at the black. The black has nothing. He's on the bottom. And the white master's on the top. He owns and controls everything with all the education. So obviously, the white man must be superior to the black man. And so then, all of a sudden, racism and the whole issue switched. Slavery and all switched from being a religious issue, it became a biological issue. When it became a biological issue, all governments mandated that you must put a person's race on his birth certificate, driver's license, whatever it is. It became a biological issue. But the race was over then. When the race was over, they looked around. And since whites had used slavery for so long, whites own everything. Almost 100% of everything, 99.5% belongs to the dominant white society. The slave owned nothing. The white was on top, the black was in a ditch. The race was over. When the race was over and blacks had nothing and whites had everything, the race ended. And what the society did then, they took the word race, R-A-C-E. They scratched the E off the end of race and stuck a suffix called ISM. ISM is a suffix which means keep the prevailing conditions, let nothing change. And that's where racism came from. The race was over. Whites won it, they had everything. They took the E off the end of the word and stuck ISM. That's where racism is. Racism is a competitive relationship starting out to get wealth and resources and power. But what they teach you now is that racism, it has something to do with liking people, getting along with people. That's not racism. And when I asked people, I said, do you know what racism is? They said, it's prejudice. You cannot eradicate prejudice. Everybody got a right to be prejudiced. All prejudice is you got a preconceived judgment or feeling about something based on previous experience. Right now, because of ice cream, I love burgundy cherry ice cream. So guess what? I'm prejudiced towards burgundy cherry ice cream. So now when I want some ice cream, I exercise my prejudice. I say, I'm going to get me some ice cream, some burgundy cherry ice cream, because that's what I'm prejudiced for. Now I say, now, where am I going to get it from? I've gotten a lot of ice cream from a lot of stores, half of one worth a quarter. That's what Baskin-Robbins has the best. So now I'm biased towards which ice cream parlor? Baskin-Robbins. I'm biased to go there to exercise my prejudice. Now when I get into Baskin-Robbins, I'll walk up and down the counter looking at all the cherry mocha, the black chocolate, chocolate rock, peppermint juicy fruit. I look at all that ice cream. And then guess what I'm doing now? Now I am discriminating. I'm discriminating against what kind of ice cream I want to satisfy my prejudice. And so I'll pick, and I go down and I say, oh, burgundy cherry, that's it? Now, that prejudice, that bias, that discrimination has nothing in the world to do with racism. Don't let people keep tricking you by comparing prejudice and discrimination with racism. That's why all the gays jump and say, well, we're just as bad off as black folks. They're prejudiced against us. That has nothing to do with racism. You tell people, I don't care about your being prejudiced or discriminated. That doesn't bother me as a black person. I'm scared of racism. I'm scared of the fact you're going to own and control everything. That's what you should be working on. So everything you do in this city must go after eradicating racism. Not prejudice, not bigotry, not getting along with people, not bias. You must try to redistribute some wealth and resources back in the hands of black folk as quickly as you can. That's what you need to be working on. Now, since we have never done that, and I told you slavery maldistributed almost 100% of all this nation's wealth, power, resources, privileges, businesses, and controls of all levels of government into the hands of the dominant white society, well, look at what's happening. We never corrected it. And since we never corrected racism the way it started out, that means in this country right now that the average white person in America has 3,500 times more wealth than the average black person. Y'all didn't hear that, did you? Let me give it to you again. You cannot be equal when the average white person in this society has 3,500 times more wealth than the average black person. Even if you're a middle-class black, in the $40,000 to $50,000 range, the white person has 800 to 900 times more wealth than you. If you're a black female, that means the white female has a dollar for every 2 cents you have to run a household. Let me even be, since you all still don't understand this point. In America right now, where you think you're so equal in Baltimore, that you're so free, that you can spend all your time enjoying life and not worried about what's going to happen to you, in this society right now, American society, I got two white Americans alone that have more wealth than all 36 million black folk put together. If I take Ralph Ellison and Bill Gates, they got more wealth than all the black folk in America put together. Where is your equal opportunity? Where are you equal? What are we thinking about when it's wealth that decides what you own and control?
Okay. I think that was well put. Dr. Claude Anderson, Powernomics Network, building stuff all over America, giant pools, they growing their own fish, all kind of stuff. Amazing. The buying power classifying as black America. We're spending $3.3 billion per year on tobacco. $3 billion per year on alcohol. $29.3 billion on clothes. $19 billion on cell phone service. With 54% using smartphones. $9 billion a year on hair care. $9 billion a year on hair care. Who is owning the business? One out of every 10 Asians. One out of every 35 whites. One out of every 54 Hispanics. And one out of every 104 black people. That's staggering. Those statistics are staggering. So it's not that we don't have the money. That's not the issue. We got that. It's obvious that we have that. But I think the problem is we have not changed our mind and looked at ourselves as a collective entity from one end of this country to the other. I think what we do is what is going on is we still have this thing in our mind of individualism. And one thing I learned about baseball is when a batter steps up to the plate, it's time for individual achievement. And if he hits that ball, that's when we have teamwork. Everybody springs into action. The third baseman, he's alert. The shortstop, he's alert. The pitcher, he's looking. The first baseman is ready. The second baseman is ready. Everybody swings into action. But when he's at that plate, we're talking about individual achievement. So I think we have to concentrate more on teamwork. We have to look at where we are. What have we been doing with our money collectively? You know, I mean, what good is it going to do us to have the $1 billion if everybody's scattered? Everybody's on the individual achievement thing. Nobody's networking. Nobody's trying to get together. Nobody's trying to come together where they are and look at what they can do collectively for the benefit of their neighborhood right where they are. I think that's where we have to start. But before we start there, I think we're going to have to start with the man in the mirror. We're going to have to get in there and look dead at us and realize that we're just as good as anybody else. All we have to do is change our mind. Now, you cannot, in my opinion, I think you'll be much more successful if you begin to do some research about your own self and about your own ancient culture and connect to your own ancient culture in your own studies so that you know something about your own self. I mean, why would you go out in the world and feel like, well, since it's a new age, I don't need to know anything about my ancient culture? No. I think you need to do that. So at any point in time, if you are faced with somebody that has pride in their culture, well, you or have pride in your own too, and be able to explain something about it so that they will understand the depth of what you know about your own self. You see, because man is more convinced by the depth of your conviction than he is by the height of your logic. What is it that you know about yourself? Is it that you can say that you know and that you can provide proof of about your ancient culture? That's one of the reasons why I've created Tahaka's Archives, the master library that has tons of information on you, about you. So all you have to do is get in there and learn that right there in the privacy of your home. You have to go out down the streets to the library. You have that right there on your computer. You can study that at your leisure. Made it easy for you. If you want to print out some materials, you can do that. If your child wants to start studying their ancient culture, an ancient story, it is right there in that library, and they can print the materials out and carry it in the classroom and put it right there in front of them. So when the teacher starts telling them about Europe, they can go ahead and say, well, let me tell you about my culture, my story. I mean, you know, you told me about the Spanish, you told me about the Europeans, you told me about Christopher Columbus and all that, but you haven't mentioned anything about something that I'm familiar with. You see, when I was going to school, we had books that they would give us, and all the books had their images in it. We had Alice and Jerry, and Alice and Jerry, I think it was Alice and Jerry, they had a dog named Spot, but the only thing that I could identify with was the Spot that was on Spot. That's all. There was nothing in the books that I could identify with. There were absolutely no subjects taught to me about my ancient culture, nothing. Nothing at all. There was a deliberate attempt to keep you from knowing who you are so that they can maintain control over you, because you cut off from your roots. You don't have anything to be proud about. So you gravitate toward other cultures and other things and all this stuff. Well, not me. Anyway, I just wanted to give you that there are food for thought. What is the business and monetary solution? And we've already discovered what is missing, and that's separation from knowledge of self. You got the churches throughout the entire United States with the Sunday school banner right out there in front of the church. They tell you what time, what the name of the church is, what time Sunday school starts, and what time evening service starts, and all this here. But we have one big saying throughout our ancient covenant, and that is, man, know thyself. Man, know thyself. Why is that so important? That's extremely important. You know, you can't tell anybody anything about something if you don't know nothing about yourself. Because if you have a question about your ancient culture, your ancient story, you can't tell them nothing. You know, come on, man. You know, you have all the college degrees you want, but if you don't know who you are, I mean, well, wow, man. Dang, come on. that ain't cutting it, you know. In my opinion, of course, that's just my opinion.
Hello, everyone. How you doing? It's Derek Henry here, Black Business Builders Club. Thank you today for coming in, checking out my blog, and I hope you are having a wonderful day, and I wish you a prosperous week. And I was just want to share a few things with you today. I was thinking recently about all the black-owned businesses that are online, offline, all the black networks, you know, that are online and offline today, all the various different niches that are occurring in entrepreneurship for black people today. And I also began to think about this Vietnamese family that lives in my neighborhood. It's about four Vietnamese families living inside of this one house together, and they pool all their resources together because eventually, sometime down the road, their plan is to open up a restaurant here in town. So they pool all their resources together, they all live together, and they work together, and occasionally you see them outside having dinner together on a nice summer evening, and they're very nice people. We have conversation, and their goal is to open up a restaurant here in town. And I admire the way they work collectively together in pursuit of that objective or that goal. So I begin to think how that works in so many other cultures, and how so many other cultures work together just like that in an effort to increase or improve their economic base. And they use each other's, one another's services, they use one another's businesses, and they refer each other's businesses even outside of their own cultural group. Now, I started to think about how this doesn't happen as much within the black community. For some reason, I don't understand what it is, we don't seem to work that closely together. We don't seem to utilize one another's services to recycle our money and to build a stronger economic base. It's as if we all are so fragmented in terms of business that we fear that if we use one another's business, we're going to lose business elsewhere outside of our cultural group. So I began to think about that, and I just wanted to pose that question in my blog today. Are we really that fearful of one another? Do we really have that type of mistrust for one another's businesses and services? So that's my blog question for today. See, because in the Black Business Builders Club, what we are all about is helping businesses and entrepreneurs to come together in unity to improve our economic base as a people, because we understand that our strength is in our economic base and in our ability to work together. You see, these other ethnic groups, they have learned that a long time ago, and they exercise that every single day. I'm quite sure that the same family I was talking to you about, their doctor is Vietnamese. They frequent the Vietnamese restaurant here in town. And other groups do the same thing. I mean, you see it all the time. There's no denying it. But no one would ever accuse them of being a racist group or a racist club because they came together to build their own community or to give their community a stronger economic base and to empower their own people. They're never accused of that. But for some reason, when you talk in terms of even like a Black Business Builders Club, you hear, you get the question, Why does it have to be a Black Business Builders Club? Why can't it be just an ethnic business builders club or a minority business builders club? And primarily these questions come from other black people, which really amazes me. It's because mentally we've been conditioned to not trust one another, to be ashamed of who we are. The old gospel singer James Brown wrote this song a long time ago called Unity, and he also started that mantra, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. We need to go back to that, because our strength is in our ability to come together and to trust one another and be proud, proud of who we are. Not be ashamed of who we are, you know, to be proud of who we are. I am a black man who happens to be in business. That's who I am. When I look into the mirror, I see a black man doing business, and I don't make any excuses for that. That's who I am, and I'm proud of it. And so that's what we're all about in the Black Business Builders Club. So I want to suggest to you that you think about utilizing one another's businesses, utilizing one another's services, not just because they're black, but because they offer value. So check them out. Find the value in what they do. And I'm quite sure you'll find many businesses such as yours that have value that you can use and value that you can offer back to them. It's all about us using one another's services and growing together. I want to share something with you. It's something I recently read. Just a second. Let me share this with you. It's from the King James Version in the Bible. It's Psalms 133. And it says, "Behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It is like the precious ointment upon the head that ran down upon the beard, even Aaron's beard that went down the skirts of his garments, as the dew Hermon, and as the dew that descended upon the mountains of Zion. For there the Lord commanded the blessing, even life forevermore." You see, my brothers and my sisters, that's what it's all about. Us being able to come together as one, no matter what network you belong to, no matter what network you own, no matter what business you have or what services you're providing, we all have diverse niches. But if we can come together in unity to serve a common purpose, and that is recycling our money and creating a strong economic base for our people, and to teach other businesses and other and our children and young people to be entrepreneurs, to have entrepreneurial thinking, we can rise above our current situation, and we can be the lenders, not the debtors, in this society. It's all about us being willing to come together. So I'm going to ask you today to think about that. And if you want any more information about what I do and what the Black Business Builders Club is doing to make that a possibility for us, please don't hesitate to contact me. Once again, my name is Derek Henry.
I've been asked over and over by a lot of people about the exercising your freedom of rights to travel. And that is something that I have done. I've done it quite well, and I do it today. However, it is something that you have to understand. First of all, there are things that you need to know in order to have the confidence to get out there on that pavement and defend yourself and be able to do this thing successfully. This information is contained in Talker's Archives. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And once you look over that page, click on TahakaArchives.org. Go over there, and you'll see Tahaka's Archives Master Library, where the audio, video, the documentation, and everything else that you would need is right there available for you in order for you to exercise your freedom of rights to travel. That saves you a ton of money. That saves you jail. That keeps you from having to have a driver's license, tag, registration, and all that kind of stuff. www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Once you get there, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061. Try to call me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, Moses, we're back. I want to add that the information that the brother put out there a minute ago, and Dr. Claude Anderson, was very, very, very good advice. I think what we need to start doing now, if every man and woman inside the United States, if you got a job and you're working on that job and you're making somebody else rich for peanuts, then in return for peanuts, then I think we need to start dealing with what's called diversification. Look the word up, diversification. In other words, take a little bit of what you're getting from where you are and start putting it aside so that you can open up your own business and stop going around trying to get a job and start getting in position to provide jobs for people who look like you. Now, and this doesn't have anything to do with racism whatsoever. We, you know, I mean, I feel like if the Chinese people and Japanese and Korean people can come into my neighborhood, and they're in my neighborhood, we down here where we are, we're down here in the South, we're familiar with collard greens and macaroni salad and potato salad and ribs and chicken and stuff of this nature. This is what we're familiar with. But now we have another people that come from another land that came in your house, put their menu up with their food on it. And you go in there and say, well, look, I don't know what that is up there, that Kung Fu Fu Young. I don't know nothing about that. You don't have no. We don't have that. That's it up there. You either eat that or you get out. That's amazing. Somebody could come in your community and bring their culture and make you eat it. And we line up in there. I walk in one of them, and because they throw me out of that. They throw me out. But I walk in there, and 95% of the people in there look like us. All across the United States. You know, as soon as something come out, we friend one with it. They come out with a new car, we got to get one. They come out with a new tennis shoe, oh, man, I got to have them. $300-$400. Come out some new rims. Oh, man, bro. No, they don't say that. They say, dog, I'm going to get them rims, dog, man. If I had to work overtime, I'm going to get them rims. Okay, so you get the rims, put them on your car, and you ride around in the city to impress other broke people. Now you have accomplished something. Okay, now let's deal with the business aspect collectively, looking at where we are, what we are facing inside the United States. Okay, we got grocery stores all over the United States that we don't own. We don't own no shoe factories. We don't own no clothing factories. Okay? So that in itself is like a rock being held over your head right there. That's the way I see it. You know, you're still in a very, very dangerous position. But now we got a lot of money. Okay, yeah, we got the money. So, once again, it just boiled down to change your mind. So, my question is, what is it going to take for us to change our mind? What is it that is going to happen before we just start thinking differently and start acting differently and start doing differently? What is it? What's going to have to happen? I mean, if it's anybody out there can help me with that question, go ahead and raise your hand. On Tuesday night, we will have the Grand National Chairman for the Moorish American Government will be with us, and we will be discussing Rome's concentration camps and that kind of stuff, and so that we can bring the facts that we know and put them on the table. And I would encourage you to be here so that you can hear him tell us about this thing and put some things in perspective that we need to understand. Because I think, in my personal opinion, the days for us to shuck and jive and just pee society away is over. I mean, we don't have no communities. Everybody got communities but us. Everybody is connected to their culture but us. Everybody is on their own businesses everywhere, all up and down, all in our house, all over our house. You know, I got the, right down the street from me, I got the Arabs down there, and at the other end of the street, their relatives own the other store. down the street from them. Then up there on the main street, we got the Greeks that own a whole set of buildings right on the side. Across the street from them, the Caucasian got a little store. And 99.99.9% of the customers look like me. And I'm trying to see how is it going to be possible for us to survive as a people with what we call spending power. Where is the power in spending? Who was it that came out with that? Who said that? Who brought that out to about the black spending power? The only way that I can see that statement ever being made is the recipient of the money and saying that he has power because of black spending. That's the only way I can see it, because it seems to me that the people are doing all the spending and are doing absolutely no investing and scattered and disconnected from the culture has no power, period. It doesn't matter how much money they got in their hand. They have no power. Have no collective nothing, you know. And so I want to know, what is it going to take? What do we have to wait until there is a national crisis and a national collapse and a national hit in the head with a rock for us to start thinking different and do different? Or is it going to be that in the morning when I wake up, I'm going to see my people doing the same thing? Now, tomorrow, what I'm going to do tomorrow is I'm going around the corner, and I'm going to go out of the parking lot. I'm going to spend a certain amount of time out there, and I'm going to count how many of my people go inside the Asian hair store and walk out. I'm going to count how many that I see, and I'm going to also count how many Asians that I see go in there and buy Asian hair and come out. And I'm going to count how many Caucasians that I see when I go in there and come out with packages in their hand. And what I'm going to do Tuesday night, if you tune in, I'll give you the numbers, and so you'll know what I've seen, and then we could count up the numbers. And that way you know exactly, have an accurate count of what's going on right here. Now, this ain't got nothing to do with the city where you at. If you want to go and count over there, go and count. You can bring the numbers in Tuesday night, let me know what you see. If you're in Chicago, if you're listening, you're from Chicago, if you're from South Carolina, if you're from Atlanta, if you're from California, if you're from New York, Wisconsin, Detroit, Dallas, Houston, Miami, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, go ahead and do your own counting and bring the numbers in so that we can let you on the air and you can give us your count so that we can see whether or not, because we don't, you know, this could just be happening in Jacksonville for all I know. It may not be happening anyplace else inside the United States. But if you call in and give me your numbers, then we will determine where you are, what you've seen, and give us the numbers so that we will know what's going on, and we can be able to see it. Now, one brother, he say he don't have a problem with a sister with weaving in here. You know, he say he ain't got no problem with it. And there's a lot of brothers who don't. I just like the girls who wear their own hair. That's just me. Every man has his own preference. You know, that's just me. That's just where I see it, you know. Because that tells me something is functioning in the brain correctly. Don't get mad at me. Don't get mad at me. That's just the way I see it. I don't know. Maybe there's something wrong with me for seeing it that way. I don't know. But I just, you know, I don't want to rub my fingers through your head and be sure to come out. And sisters, I ain't picking at y'all. Don't y'all get mad at me. I don't want to. That's just me. I don't want to do that. You got weave in your head. I'm not gonna be rude to you. I'm not going to be rude to you. Okay. It's just that I prefer that a woman has her own hair. You know, I never forget the most shocking thing that I ever experienced in my life, because I, you know, when I was a little boy, and I mean, this was so disturbing to me. I messed with my mama for a long time about that stuff. She came home, and I went in her room, and it was this little white head sitting on her dresser, and it was a hair on it. It was a woman's hair on it. It was a wig. And I asked her, I said, Mama, who hair that is? She said, that's my wig. I said, what you going to do with that? Tell her, I'm aware. I said, why? You already got some hair. I said, why you going to put that on your head? And then she would come out and had it stay over there. Come on. Y'all don't like it? I say, no. I don't like it. I'm not used to that. I'm used to you going, you say you go to the hairdresser, you come back, you're going to be so pretty and stuff. But this, what is this? What, I say, who the hell is it? Because I, in my mind, as a little boy, I didn't know nothing about the manufacturing and the industry and the hair thing. I thought that somebody had died, and she had got, she went to the funeral home, and they gave her the hair. That's what I thought. And I kept asking her who hair it was. Who hair it is? And she kept saying, I bought it from the store, and I couldn't understand that part. I kept asking her, yeah, but because I'm thinking it's real, because it looked real, so that means it came off another person's head. And I'm trying to find out who the person is. Is it somebody we know? But she kept that thing for a long time. Every time she put it on, she come out there, I'm finna go up here to the store. One of y'all want to ride with me? I said, no, I don't want to ride with you. She said, I know why you don't want to ride, but I don't care. I'm wearing my wig. It was a big mess behind that thing there. That thing disturbed me so doggone bad. And then I got up, and when I got to high school, all the women I seen in there, they had their own hair. And so I liked them, you know. And then they came out with this weave stuff. And it really, really disturbed me because, they was going and they had this thing. They put this stuff, and they have this, I think they put glue. I think they have glue, and then they be like, I'm gonna leave that alone. Let me leave that alone, because I don't want to offend nobody. I'm just trying to. I guess I'm kind of primitive. I guess, you know, I guess I don't know. I pulled into the grocery store parking lot, opened my car door, and I got ready to step out, and with some stuff on the ground, I fell out the door because I didn't know what it was. It was a big clump of weave. I thought it was an animal. But anyway, I didn't know. I got past that. But anyway, I see sisters with weaving ahead and stuff like that. I'm not going to be rude to you. You know, I'm going to communicate with you just like I communicate with anybody else. You know, I'm not going to criticize you or none of that. But if you ask me what I like, I'm going to tell you exactly what I like. Okay, so that's just me as a man. That's just me. Okay. How can I respect you if you date or marry outside your race? Now, that's interesting because that's disturbing to me, too. I never forget I had a chat room, and this chat room was for mixed couples, and I got on there because there was a sister on there. They had the little icon over there. It was the sister. She was married to a Caucasian, and I got a chance to chat with her first, and I asked her. I said, "You?" She said, "Oh yeah." She was telling me how much she loved her husband, and you know, and how excited she get, you know, when he comes home and stuff. And I asked her, I said, well, are all your children from your husband? She said, yes, yes, all my children are from my husband. And I said, are you a source of African descent? She said, yes, I am black. And I said, well, I don't understand. You know, y'all ran out of brothers in your city? And so she got mad with me. She didn't want to chat no more. And she mother would have told her husband because he come back and got on the chat line. He want to chat. And he got on there, well, what's the problem? I said, well, I'm trying to understand something. I say, what is the, I say, how many children you have? He told me he had four kids. I said, how many of them are extremely dark? He said, thank God, none of them are. I said, well, no. And I said, you happy? I said, but you married a so-called black woman. You know, and I asked her what her complexion was. She told me she was dark skinned, very dark. And I said, well, okay, but your husband is telling me that he married you. He said he loved you, and y'all have four kids, but thank God none of them didn't come out looking like you. I didn't understand that. So it's very, very interesting when I was on that chat line. Well, they kicked me off of there, too. I got kicked out of there, too. And I guess because I was asking the wrong questions. But the question was specific, but nobody wanted to address the questions that I was asking.
I think if people could really grasp the power of the internet, they would drop everything they're doing right now today and learn as much about it as they could. There's 1.5 billion users on the internet right now.
When asked what was the most important invention of the 20th century, 7% said television, 11% said the telephone, and 80% said
the computer.
Pick up any magazine, watch any television show, read any newspaper.
.com is the buzzword of the millennium.
In 1998, there were 95.4 million people online.
By 2005, estimates predict over 700 million.
In 1998, e-commerce generated $39 billion in revenue. In 1999, $114 billion. By 2004, estimates predict $1.5 trillion.
E-commerce has arrived. And guess who's shopping? Teenagers, Generation Xers, Baby Boomers, and even seniors, the fastest growing segment online.
Ask yourself three questions. One, is the internet the future? Two, are there fortunes being made on the internet? Three, are you making a fortune on the internet?
Why not? Because fortunes are being made now, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
The 40 richest people under the age of 40?
Guess what? Over half of them made their fortunes on the internet. And believe it or not, you could too.
All you need is access to a computer.
The internet will do two things. Create new opportunities and destroy old ways and methods of doing business.
Welcome to the Internet Gold Rush. You can stake your claim or sit back and watch it all happen.
Call it networking,
affiliate marketing,
direct selling,
referral marketing.
Call it whatever you want. It's already a $100 billion a year business.
A business that you can do part-time or full-time and can be started at home with no large capital outlay, low overhead, no employees, and no special business expertise or technical skills. A business that allows you to work your hours for your goals.
A business that offers time freedom, financial freedom, and a franchise-like step-by-step business plan. And according to most experts, a home-based business offers incredible tax advantages.
What are you waiting for?
Think e-commerce is going away?
Statistics show that 96% of adults ages 25 to 44 are looking to own their own business.
The only question is, are you ready?
Are you tired of being passed up for promotions, tired of commuting, tired of the rat race?
Are you ready to work your own hours? Take a vacation when you want to, not when they let you.
Drive the car you've always dreamed about, not the one you can afford.
Live where you want to live, not where your job puts you.
Retire in style, not on a shoestring.
So my rich dad said, in the world of business, there's E's. And E's stand for employees. An employee, he says, you can always tell who they are by their core values. And what the employee, whether the president or the janitor of the company, will always say the same words. The words are, I'm looking for a safe, secure job with benefits. That's what makes them an employee, because their core values are security. The other one of the four is the S, or the small business owner, or the self-employed. And again, their core values will cause them to use the same words, which are, if you want it done right, do it by yourself. S means they're also solo. They're generally one-person act, or they operate by themselves. On the right side of the quadrant are the B's. And what Rich Dad said the B stood for was big business, or like Bill Gates. Forbes defines big business as 500 employees or more. And their words are different. They say, I'm looking for a good system, a good network, and the smartest people I know to help run my business. So they're unlike the S. They don't want to run the company by themselves. They want smart people to run their companies for them. And then the fourth of the quadrant is the I, and I stands for investor. These are people who have money work hard for them. These people are people who have people work hard for them. And these are the people that work hard for the rich here. So early on in my life, it was my poor dad who always said to me, you know, Robert, go to school and so get a high-paying job. And so my poor dad's core value was to be an employee. He wanted job security, promotions, a steady paycheck, and all this. And so it was my rich dad who said to me, he says, you know, Robert, if you really want to be rich, learn to build businesses. It made more sense to him to work hard to build a business, something you owned and something you could pass on for generation to generation to your kids. Whereas my poor dad said, work hard, but my rich dad said, why would you work hard for something you'll never own and you can get fired from right away? Again, that was the difference in values. So my rich dad suggested I learn how to be a business owner and learn how to be an investor. And that's one of the big differences. On this side of the quadrant, these people here work for security. They work for money also. On this side over here, their key value that they want is they want freedom.
Hi, my name is Michael Forrest. I've been successfully marketing and making my living on...
Another one of the biggest problems facing people of African descent inside the United States today is the fact that many of us are unemployed and then a lot of us are on jobs. But the biggest thing that we should be concentrating on now is to getting to our own enterprises and begin to network with each other and to concentrate on transforming our money into wealth. Visit TahakaPowernomics.net. That's www.TahakaPowernomics.net. Sign up for the Platinum Plus Matrix. Contact me, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Very, very powerful opportunity for you to take back your communities. Take control of your life. Be in position to be a have more instead of continuing to be a wish more.
Okay, Moses, we're back. Now, I want to deal with something. I wrote an article the other day, and this is just some stuff that I, off the top of my head that I remember. It was called The Have Mores versus The Wish Mores. And inside the article, I tell the story of how the difference between the two. If the wishmores, these are your average suburban family, the husband worked, the wife worked, they have their own home, They have several vehicles, and they have the core belief that their children should go to school, get a good education so they can get a good job just like mom and daddy, and get the benefits and get all the packages that the company has to offer. And but the Wishmore, the young son, he comes to his dad and say, "Dad, would you buy me a bicycle?" And his dad say, "Well, I think you're about of age, and sure, me and your mother, we'll get together and we'll go to the store." And, of course, they go to a store and they pick out a bicycle and they buy it for the young man. And he has a new bike now. He's able to ride a new bike. But now, the Have Mores, they have a whole different approach. Their core values is never, ever, ever work for anybody under any circumstances unless it's temporary for a specific length of time to acquire seed capital for investment in our own company. I mean, that's just standard all the way across the board. You only go to a specialized school for specialized information that you can use into owning your own company. And everything that the Have-Mores are doing is duplicatable. But now, the young son, he comes to his dad and say, "Well, Dad, could you buy me a bike?" And what Dad would do is Dad say, "Sure, son, I sure will buy you a bike. Come, but before we do that, let's get in here on the computer. What kind of bike do you want?" And he explains the bike and what kind it was, and he's seen it advertised, and he said, "Well, when is the next commercial coming on about the bike?" And they say, "Okay, well, it comes on TV, and do you know the name of it?" He gets on and he types it in, and they locate the bike. And then they locate the company that manufactures the bike. And then they find out how is this particular stock trading on the New York Stock Exchange. And Dad goes ahead and teaches the young Have-More how to locate this stock, invest in the stock of this bike. And after you get these investments all set and the tickets is all set and everything is invested in, then they can officially go out and actually spend some money for the bike. And at the same time, the son that riding the bike also owns company stock in the company that owns the bike. See, it's all about thinking. You're thinking. Okay. Area code 444-404. Come on in. 404. Let me know.
Yes, how you doing? Stanley Scott.
Mr. Scott, talk to me, brother. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind, the empowerment of the African-American community, first of all. Second, though, the empowerment of the middle class in America.
Middle class. I didn't know there was a middle class. I thought it was only two classes, rich and poor.
No, there's a middle class. Definitely a middle class in America at the present time. But we have the haves and the have-nots because we have more classism than anything else today. But you also have the classism in the middle class, which that's why it does a lot of damage to us. Anytime the middle class is divided among haves and have-nots or the ones who think they have, who play in the role, who live in the plastic life, and the ones that have not, anytime they start separating themselves, we lose or not. Because I agree with what you say as far as people, the super rich, the rich, and the rest of us. But there's a middle class. But the thing is, the middle class and the less fortunate and the underserved community need to work together and stop letting the media perpetuate the madness and keep us fighting with each other when we should be working together to empower ourselves.
Okay, well, but I'm trying to figure out about the middle class. I didn't know there was a middle class.
Yes.
What is the middle class?
I would say in Jacksonville, entry level to middle class, you can start about between 40,000 and 50,000. Then they go from there. Then you're talking about middle class average here would say about 60 if there's a husband and wife and they work in the house together. That would be about average. It's about between 45 to about 60. average middle class. And there's quite a few African Americans up there in that range and beyond. Then you have the upper middle class. Upper middle class, you're talking about 100,000 and better. But yes, there is a middle class. And there's quite a few African Americans living a middle class life in America. But they're living as consumers. Now there's business owners, as you said before, or producers.
Wait a minute. Wait. Okay, now you say there's got to be a lower class. Then there's a middle class, and then there's a upper middle class. But the middle class and the upper middle class are consumers.
Consumer. If you're talking about the African American community, no matter what class they're in, if they're in the lower class, then you have the lower middle class, you have the middle class, then you have the higher middle class. There are three levels. Now we're talking about the ones that are less fortunate.
And a higher middle class too?
There's a lower middle class that start about 40,000. The average middle class is somewhere between, I would say, 45 to 65. And then 65 on up, most of them will probably be in the six-figure, 100,000 or better. Well, say 90,000 or better will be the upper middle class. Go all the way up to about 250.
Okay, now, because you lost me with that one, because my understanding is either you rich or you ain't. I don't know nothing about no middle nothing.
So I can elaborate a little bit more. No, there's poor, there's wealthy, then there's rich. People are getting wealthy confused with being rich. That's wealthy is not rich. Now, as I explained to you before, and you can look it up in the book, at one, The Millionaire Next Door. A lot of them are self-made wealthy people, self-made millionaires. You can be, as I explained before, you can make $30,000 a year. And if you have 10 times that, which would be $300,000 in the bank, liquid, in the bank, you are considered wealthy. Because if anything happened to you, you can stay out of work and continue to live on that budget for $30,000 a year. You can go up to 5 years without having to worry about finding a job. That's wealthy.
Okay.
Anytime your needs and be consistent meeting your needs and maintain a quality of life for yourself, you have developed a certain amount of wealth. And you have the resources with insurance, cash in the bank, real estate and numerous other investments, appreciating investment, and you could be wealthy by having a good, you know, just being on a job. Whatever your lifestyle is, it's not defined by how much you have in this. It's what your lifestyle is, your budget. And once again, if I say you make it $30,000, lose your job, and you continue to maintain that $30,000 a year budget, you can go up to 10 years. But I have to worry about meeting your needs. So you can be off from work.
Now you keep drawing emphasis on a job, I'm a bit confused now because I'm looking at poor, regardless of what kind of class you call yourself, and then rich, and then wealthy. Now my definition of rich is having a lot of money, and you may have some gold and stuff of this nature. But when you're talking about being wealthy, now we are talking about owning whole metropolises. We're talking about building whole subdivisions. We're talking about never having to work nowhere with nobody at no time. The only thing you spend your time doing is moving wealth, moving whole conglomerates.
No, that's not wealth, man. It's riches, what you're talking about. That's riches. You can look it up, for yourself. I mean, if you have access to the Internet, you can pull it up right now. You're talking about riches. Those are people who are rich, who have a certain amount of millionaires and above. They have a certain amount of resources. Now, people who live between $100,000 to $1 million, they still can invest and develop stuff. But when we're talking about buying whole communities and developed communities, a lot of them time here, you can have You can have a developer, but he's getting his money from someone, either from a bank or wherever he's getting the pay from, someone that has a lot of, that is rich. There's a difference between rich and wealthy.
Well, let me ask you this. Is Bill Gates rich or wealthy?
He rich.
He's not wealthy.
Yeah, he rich. Now, you're hearing he's talking about the most wealthy people in the world, but what they're talking about is rich. It's a difference. Those guys are really rich. Wealthy, anybody can be a wealthy.
What I'm asking you, if Bill Gates is rich, that means he's not wealthy, right? Because you say, go ahead.
He passed wealthy. He's rich.
Oh.
That's a certain amount of power there.
Okay.
In that word. Rich found a whole different than wealthy because in Bill Gates' situation, he started off with his parents. They had a certain amount of wealth anyway. His parents didn't build from there. I mean, it wasn't his money, but his parents had a certain amount of wealth, so he was able to do something that ordinary persons who don't have anyone with a certain amount of wealth who can invest in them are not able to do. And that's the difference in the African-American community compared to a white. A lot of times when we talk about riches, their riches are inherited riches. They didn't make the money. That's through a trust and many other things that their family may have that passed along generational.
Well, let me ask you this. In your opinion, do you think that we should ever have a violent revolution in America?
Violent revolution won't help us in America. Now, you can have a violent revolutionary event in America, but it should be based on controlling your dollars. That's the best way to deal with America if you want to have a revolution. And we definitely should have a revolution, but we should control dollars. Violent revolution won't help us. Yeah, that won't get us anywhere. That'll set us back more than move us forward.
Well, what about getting in a position so that we can create our own money with our own picture on it and start using that as our own currency?
What are you talking about in America?
Yeah.
Because in other countries over there, you just talking about in America, that won't happen. That'll be a waste of time when you'll be using that energy for something more productive. I mean, just get the dollars, period, regardless of who face on it, doesn't make a difference. Controlling the dollars is all it's about anyway. Controlling the dollars that you have in your resources is what it's all about. We don't need our face on it. That's irrelevant. There, the most important thing is controlling the dollar. And being able to
I find that quite interesting, Stanley, because if it didn't make a difference, why didn't they put our picture on it?
Didn't it make a difference? Why didn't they put it? Because we weren't in control. Why would they put our pictures on here? We ain't controlling nothing. Why would they put slaves on there?
If we got in control, you don't think it's a good idea we create our own money with our own picture and our own seals and all of this?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. You create your own money when you control your money. I don't give a crap who face on it. If you're in America and somebody else face on it, I don't care who face on it. And you controlling your money, well, your face on it because it's your money. So you putting a face on it. When they go in there spend your money, they're looking at your face. So if you got money, then your face is on it. Because when you go in the store to spend it, put your credit card up there on the table, they're looking in your face. So they see your face. You see it in person. So it doesn't make a difference about that. The main thing right now we need to be focused on is getting the money. Getting the money, controlling the money, making sure it hit our hands 39 times, seeing our community at least 3 to 5 years. That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we
are. Well, the reason why I'm asking you this is because I remember a case where this guy, he was his vehicle had been confiscated, and it was wrapped up in a case about drugs, and they were accusing him of having drugs in the vehicle. But the guy had $1,500 cash in the vehicle, and the police department took the vehicle and took all the contents of the vehicle, and the guy filed a lawsuit, and he had the title to the car and all this. And when he got in the courtroom, Judge Eisenhoff, did he own the car? He said, yes, I do. Here's the title to the car right here. And the judge asked him, well, how did you buy the car? He said, well, I bought that car cash money. And the judge ruled against him because he said, well, you used the property of the Federal Reserve to buy the car, so that's not your money. You used somebody else's money that belonged to somebody else. I'm going to have to rule against you. And he ruled in favor of the officers being not guilty. And so, but I'm trying to understand if he had his own money with his own face on it, and that he manufactured and it came from him, how could the judge have ruled that that belonged to somebody else?
First of all, before I answer that, I want to say
it didn't really make any difference. Go ahead.
Well, it's hard for someone in my case to answer something of that nature without all the facts in front of me. But I'd like to say this here. You know, that crap the judge was talking about, you know, a lot of times judges make stuff in hope that people don't appeal or go to a higher court. But that's a bunch of crap. See, the judge didn't ask him, you know, you didn't state it that the judge asked him how did he make that money, which make a difference. Now, if he made it illegal, that's something different. But if he made that money and it's legal, he can do whatever he wants in America, I mean, within the law, as far as what he want to buy and where he want to live. So that doesn't make any sense there. Most times, like I say, with them judges here, a lot of times they do stuff because today you have a lot of them clans on the justice system. So they do all kind of stuff to black folks, hoping or assuming that we're not going to appeal it or fight it. Yes, but I don't have all the information in front of me to answer that question intelligently.
Well, let me ask you this, and this is one of the questions that I have down here on my paper. Why should I respect you or trust you if you believe in another race's religion? How would you answer that?
Now, when you say trust that person, now, let me put it this way. First of all, I don't buy into this Eurocentric religion. Simple on the fact that it was okay to have slaves. Simple on that fact, nothing else, which I can name many other things. But any religion that put my people in oppression, control my people, make them slaves, separate them, the man from the woman, cause a lot of chaos in the house, and accept certain things that is not natural when it comes to, because for me, there's always marriages between a man and a woman. That's where I'm at, and I'm sticking with that. I don't get anything. I don't care what my good friends say, President Obama, between a man and a woman. So for me, as an individual, I can't buy into the Eurocentric religion because I've seen it do too much damage. Even back in the days of Richard the Lionheart, they went right over in the same place over in Iraq and got whooped up back home and sent back to England. Same thing with America. So we went over there and got whooped up. Use our less fortunate people to go over there and do their dirty work while they're making all kind of money on the military industrial complex. So going back to religion, I can have respect for the person and not for their religion. I can put it that way.
So if a person told you that they are devout Christian, and you don't believe in the Christian religion, you can't have respect for that person.
Now, that's what you're saying? No, I can't have respect for the religion. First of all, we won't have a problem on you. That person don't come to me preaching about religion and trying to tell me what they think they know. And they don't know absolutely nothing, because if they did, they would have a more concerning spirit. They wouldn't be out there trying to control people. And that's what a lot of them do when they come up to you, preaching to you. That's a form of control. You bow down to my knowledge, because if you notice the way they be talking to you, as if you're supposed to bow down, see? Yes, and buy into it and be controlled, and this is what you're supposed to do. But then when you look around and see religion, especially in America, the way America is, and what they stand for, and the way kids out here are being raped and women raped and the education system, you know, I can't respect that religion. Because the religion I know where I'm from deal with spirituality. I mean, oneness. meaning regardless of your color, your skin complexion, how you talk, we all in this together. And by us being together and working together, we can move forward. And that's what I find out about the most of African religion. And most of them, a lot of them that came over on the slave ship was Muslim from the West Coast, about a third of them. So when we talk about this religion here, you know, I understand how African-Americans may feel, but that's due to their lack of knowledge, why they buy into it and go along with this program and go around giving these jack-legged preachers their money when they can't put food on the table.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, this is number eight on my list over here, and this is, I want you to answer this for me. Number eight says, how in the world can I respect or trust you if you won't even wear your own hair or nails? What do you think about that?
Well, that comes from the baby doll test, the miseducation of the Negro. That comes from the baby doll test where young African-American kids think that a white doll is the way of the world. An African-American doll is bad, ugly. Yes. So that's a conditioning. And due to religion, really religion have caused that problem. Because when you go in most African-American churches here, they're not talking about anything that would empower people. They're talking about Jesus, God. That ain't going to empower nobody. They're not talking about things about restoring the family, financial education. I'm talking about life discipline, history about self. So that's why I always ask these so-called intellectuals, why is it that free slaves cannot maintain what slaves created? We got all this intellectual out here. We got all this freedom. So I ask them the question all the time, once again, why is it that free slaves cannot maintain what slaves created? That tells you a lot right there about your community, about your people.
Well, what about how you feel about women that wear weave and nails purchased from the Koreans?
I feel those to me are a lot of them are sisters that lost. They don't have no self-identity. That's where that comes from. Because if they only knew how beautiful their hair is, the many shape, fashion, and forms it can take. If they know they eat the proper food, their nails will grow nice and long and beautiful. The original woman, once again, let me say, the original woman who come from the dirt, if she go back to the dirt with eating the good food out here, growing some of the food with the program that y'all are doing and a few others, she won't need all that stuff. She'll be proud of her hair. She'll be proud of herself. And then once she get to know herself by studying, once again, by taking the time to read about herself besides all the other mess on TV, then she'll understand what she got going for her. Then she won't hide her beauty because that's all it does. When you put on those weeds, when you put on all that old makeup, when you do all that mess on your hair. And then what's really sad about it, when another nationality is selling it to you. Now, that's really appalling because if you don't do it, you sell it to your own people.
Okay. Well, now, let me ask you this, Stanley. Now, this is a very, very critical question, and I'm talking about us as a people of African descent here. Can you trust and respect a person if you know that person believes in multiculturalism?
I didn't get the last part. I apologize.
Can you trust and respect person of African descent when you know that they believe in multiculturalism?
It would be hard for me to trust you because I don't know where you stand if you're flipping back and forth. Now, you should love all people, but you should have should lean toward your race, and that's what all nationalities do. So I'm not saying something that's unique. We the only people that let people come in.
You believe that we should love all people?
Yes, you should love all people, but yourself first. yourself first. Now, get this is my opinion here. You should love self first. So that means you should sweep in front of your own door and get yourself together, and look out for yourself. And that means it's knowing yourself, having your own spirituality, creating your own businesses and jobs, so they go hand in hand. Keeping your community
clean. Loving all people, we'll say that if you does have love for yourself and respect for yourself, don't you think that attempting to love all people is a form of multiculturalism?
No.
In your opinion?
No.
No?
No, because you're in the collective. No matter how you may think of yourself at the end as an individual, you're still in the collective. Yes. And anybody that is doing good, you should love them. Nothing wrong with that, no matter what race they are. You don't want to get tied up into that, because, see, that'll get you, keep you confused when you think that you should be.
Do you have any Asian hair salons over there in the community, neighborhood that you live in? Are there any Asian restaurants in that area? Okay.
Yes, they're everywhere.
How many of them do you think love you?
Well, they don't love me. I wouldn't say they love me, and I can speak on that because of what I do in the community. So I can't say they love me. When people love you, they give back to you. They don't take from you.
But you love
them. Now, when you
love
my
them. You love them.
I love them as people. I love them as people, not as business people. Now, you're talking about two different things. I love them as people, period. Now, let me say this, though. The reason why they're in our community is because we let them in. So we can't talk
about
that.
What should we have done to prevent them from coming in your opinion?
You don't want to work on prevention. You want to work on being proactive in your own community by creating your own opportunity. Because even with all these Asian restaurants in our community, where is the soul food restaurant, the one that gives you good service, clean, got a good price? Where are they? You got all these churches around here. Why don't these churches don't open up in it with good service for the community? So if you leave a door open, anybody gonna walk in. So I'm not blaming them for setting up in our community. They see an opportunity. That originally began in the 60s with the Jews. They were the first one. They marched with us, and they saw the opportunity, and they took advantage of it. So every 10 years, you got a different nationality, and we allow that to happen.
Tell us about the think tank, and how can we get involved with that? And what's it all about,
Well, the think tank is providing another solution, another perspective. The African-American Economic Recovery Think Tank focuses on solution only. And this solution is direct. What I mean by that is a direct solution is we tell it just like it is, no matter where it should fall. And we deal with the truth. So we go in the community, we look at what's going on in the community, and we provide a solution. We also provide an implementation plan here, which we'll be coming up with the State of Emergency Economic Summit, Leadership Summit, that will be coming up, which you'll be a part of it, too. I definitely want you at the table. But the African-American Economic Recovery Think Tank.
Before I be a part of it, I'm gonna need to know everything about it, who in it, where the money coming from, everything. Before I can make a decision. But go ahead and finish telling us.
The American Economic Recovery Think Tank, everybody gonna get a summary of it before the event, so they'll know exactly what's going on, what's going down, because it's time to make this paradigm shift. The African American Economic Recovery Think Tank is a solution based think tank. It deals with community development. It was created in 2004. The way to contact me is easy. That's what my email address is, DOC3507@msn.com. Once you Google that email address, it'll lead you to all the information you need there. But in the African-American community, we at the point here for the last 50 years, we have not had any proactive leadership. Our leadership been comatose or self-serving. Only thinking about that class that we're talking about, which is the Boulay class, and looking out for themselves. We need a paradigm shift in our leadership. We need compassionate leadership that's concerned about the community itself, concerned about creating business for ourselves, concerned about re-educating our community, concerned about health care prevention. So these are the four main components that the African-American Economic Recovery Think Tank look at whenever they go in the community. Family, rebuilding the family, education, health care prevention, and generational prosperity. And that's piece of the thing that we originally...
What if Bill Gates come along and say he wanted to donate $1 million to the African American think tank? What would you all do?
Oh, well, the information. What we do with $1 million? The first thing we would do, me as the president of it, I would introduce my community as far as web building to network marketing.
Wait a minute. If Bill Gates came and they said, well, look, I'm going to give you guys $1 million. Would you accept $1 million from him?
Yes. And be asking for more.
Okay.
That's right. Every day of the week. I'm waiting on Bill Gates. I'm asking for more than that from his foundation and the many other foundations in this country. After we had the leadership summit, we'll be going into the implement stage of the leadership summit here to move things forward. We already doing something with 32209. With the Department of Children and Family and the Casey Foundation, owned by UPS. It was already in the African-American community. So, yes, that's in UPS because the UPS is all in the community through the Casey Foundation. But anybody come along with some money, the first thing first thing I would invest in real estate ownership. Second would be network marketing as far as educating the community. Because a lot of them have a misunderstanding about network marketing, and they still remember from the back in the 70s when it first started up. It's a whole new ball game, and that's one of the fastest ways for African America to invest a minimal amount of investment to get a maximum return in its generational and residual, which is a good thing.
Okay, you want to recommend some network marketing opportunities to get involved with?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the best things I recommend right off the bat here for people to get is with a Motor Club of America, MCA. And the reason why I say that is not just for the income that you can generate after a couple of years of putting in some time in, but the benefits are outstanding, especially when you come to getting tickets. Depends on what level you are. When it comes to getting a ticket, a lot of times people go down there, they don't know what to do, but a lawyer can go down there and represent you, and you don't have to take off from work and all that to handle that business and interrupt your life. You can keep moving. If you have a breakdown, the numerous things that they do, the list is so vast, we'll be here the rest of the night trying to go down that list. But MCA is one. Also, I would say with the leadership, a lot of us have a lot of issues with the criminal system, things that we cause and things not our fault. That's a good thing to have. Yeah, they used to call it prepaid legal. They call it something else now. It skipped my mind right now. And another one, I will invest. I don't have a name for it, but invest on anything that has to do with food. That's a good thing too, because you do have to eat. And there's many things that's coming along through the pipeline where you can invest as far as network marketing to get a residual income and also have your own community. That's a good way to keep money in the community through network marketing. And we'll be talking about that as time go by. I'm looking to do great things with you because you're providing a great service to your community. And I want to let you know also that I'm very proud of you and what you're doing. And you're very consistent and have a lot of perseverance. And I like that about you.
Well, I tell you, Stanley, I understand the severity of the situation inside the United States, and I've been looking for something that I can do. I started with helping my people with the educational aspect, and that's all I had. And create a library for them so I could make an attempt to reconnect them to their culture and put that library
right
inside their home so that the family would be able to do something and have some strength. And then I went on to other packages and getting with private contractors and we were able to put up the rest of the packages and stuff. But then I'm faced with something else because now, okay, we're able to deal with the elimination of our mortgage problems, handling the IRS correctly, getting rid of the student loans and all of that stuff and educating ourselves. But how can we generate capital? So we got the TahakaPowerNomics.net thing going now. And the brothers and sisters are taking advantage of the Platinum Plus package. They're doing the little one-time donation, one-time payment of $79.88. And then they'll get that full benefit package that you're talking about for $39.99 per month with all these benefits, and then share it with somebody and put them in business. And they can all be done right there, right in the privacy of your own home. So I think we got something going here, and it's working, and it's people are benefiting from it. And I'm looking at the progress. I hold a little Wednesday night. I figure, okay, to make sure this thing keep going, I did a wealth building class where I'm able to take the marketing skills and teach them to the brothers and sisters and that's dialing into these classes and show them what to do online, how to build your website, what to say in your website, how to do your articles, how to make the connections, how to do this, that, and the other. So it's working very, very fine. And if anything comes up, we'll do something else.
So you're on the right track, and continue to do what you do.
Well, let me ask you, because see, we got some more time on the clock now. We're moving out of 2 minutes, but I still got some more questions.
Let's roll.
A person that doesn't respect yourself, their self, how do you handle that?
Well, first of all, when a person doesn't respect themselves, they have to do with a low self-esteem, a low confidence level that they have in themselves. Low value system. Those components are very important when it comes to respect yourself. And the best way to handle that is you have to ask a question. You have to ask the question why. You know, why you care so little about yourself. That's the first question I ask when I'm dealing with people, and then listen. Yes, and then I have to ask myself, you're a person that we can talk and be honest with each other. You know, no matter which way it's going across the fence. Because if we can't have an honest discussion, there's nothing really we can do to help each other. But most of that comes from low self-esteem, and most of the time it comes from not knowing of yourself and not having a support cast around you. But most of the time, as you're growing at older, a lot of the time why people tend to have low self-respect for themselves because they won't forgive themselves and forgive others. Because no matter who you are in life, you won't have challenges that come through your life. Some you control, some out of your control. But you have to learn to forgive and move on, because life is continuing to move on. If you don't, you're going to be left behind. And that's why we have so many lost African Americans today in this country, because we haven't learned to forgive. Now, don't forget now. I don't mean if you continue to step on my toe, I'm going to keep forgiving you and I'm going to forget. Yes, because it's going to get to a point where I'm going to step back on your toe.
Who is it that we got to start forgiving?
You got to forgive yourself first.
Okay.
That's where you start everything. Well, if you wrong someone, let me start with that first one. If you wrong someone and you had an opportunity, you go back and apologize. Now, there's two types of apologies that people don't understand. There's a sincere apology, and then there's the apology that you give with an excuse. That's not a real apology. Because if you apologize to me and you make an excuse for it, then you're not sincere. Sincere apology is when you go and ask someone for an apology and don't try to define or make up an excuse why it happened. So we have to do that second. Go to the person if we can. Then if you can't and they won't accept your apology, all you can do is keep moving. Because the more weight you're growing in, they got to.
Should we forgive Jews, Europeans, and Arabs for enslaving us?
In order for us to move forward, I would say yes. Second part to that, now there's a flip side to that. Second part, I mean, I'm going to say it simply this. keep your eye on them. You're lying, but you sleep with one eye open. Or you get a partner.
Wait,
you know, the best way to do it.
No, hold on. Hold on, that's that. Like you say, you say we can forgive them, but we need to keep our own.
That is
quite interesting to me, man.
Oh yeah, no, that's an African proverb. You know, hey, that's what it means by keeping your enemy close, so you can see him. So you keep a eye on him. A lion, smart lion. No. The best, that's why it's best to travel in groups so one can sleep and one can be on guard. See, black folks, what's the problem with them? We go to sleep too much. We sleep too much. And we sleep as individuals.
Okay,
we don't sleep as a group. See, that way you can be on guard and I can be sleeping. So you wake me up.
Make sure I understand this right. Make sure I got this right now. And we're supposed to forgive them for lynching, burning, raping and murdering and yesterday, and we're supposed to forgive them today for shooting our children down in the streets, incarcerating our men, and making it possible for there to be more men in prison in America than any other place on earth today, and then we should look forward to forgiving them tomorrow and continuing to do the same thing. Is that what you're telling me?
No, that's not what I'm saying. See, that's definitely not what I'm telling you. The thing here, when it comes to my incarceration rate, the dropout rate, and all the isms that's going on in our community, we have to look at ourselves. Because no one is close enough to go out there and rob people. No one is forcing you to go out there and kill your brother. No one is forcing you to break into your brother's home. No one is forcing you to go and shop in the white malls. Now, that's the problem I have with the brothers. How you allow your woman to go off, leave your community, and go shop in somebody else's mall? And then they tell you, let me say this right quick. They say, well, the price is too high. Well, by the time you spend gas and go across the bridge and drive back, you're paying the same price. Doesn't that make sense? But the problem here is, since 50 years, almost a little over 50 years, African Americans have been self-inflicted, been just doing damage to themselves. Even though slavery played a part, post-traumatic syndrome, degeneration, miseducation, all that stuff plays a part, but it plays a small part. 60 to 70% of the things that go on in African-American communities is our own fault. We could change that. But we sit around here, we vote for celebrities. We got people that's a career politician, black, continue to vote for them because they're in the Democratic Party. We pay up the preachers. No good preachers. They continue to take from our community but give nothing back.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, ignorant preachers. Yes, it's not knowledgeable about nothing. Can't create nothing for the community. Can't do nothing for the community. But ride around and hang out over there at Mickey D's in the morning time. Yes,
well,
they go to Mickey D's. They go, maybe Mickey, about every McDonald's, they be about every, in the black community, about every, what they call them places, crystals, sitting up there talking. But instead of going to the schools and walking through the schools, letting them young men see them, talk to them, get sitting up there at McDonald's. Now, the preachers ain't much smart enough to get together, pull their money together, and get a place, a breakfast place, for them to meet at and talk and eat. But they're still making somebody else rich. Now, when your leadership is not on the right track, how you think your community going to be? So your problem with us since post-civil rights era, it's been self-inflicted. We are doing it to ourselves. We continue to perpetuate racism by the things we do, especially as consumers. And wear everybody else's clothes.
Well, don't you think, because see, now we're talking about Christian ministers now. And
right.
Don't you think
exactly.
The Lord has blessed them? Don't you think the Lord has blessed them to be at Mickey D's in the morning of Crystal? Don't you think it's the Lord that blessed them? Where do you think they get the money for to do that?
No, it ain't blessed them. You got some ignorant people And I tell my people that. We've been around over a million years. Religion only been around about, what, 6,000 years? Jesus only 2,000, a little over 2,000 years? What we were doing all them other years before they came on the scene? Okay. We was in power. We control you. We were doing many things. But them folks, let me say this part to you. Yeah, them preachers going up to the McDonald's, some of the worst food in the country to be eating. So if the law sent him up there, he's doing a good job trying to kill him. So maybe that's a good thing.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute now. Okay. Okay. Because I had a brother that worked on the job with me, and he would always tell me that the Lord had blessed his pastor this and blessed his pastor that and do that. He said the Lord bless his pastor to go to the Cayman Islands, and I asked him if he put his tithes in the church. He said he did it faithfully, and he said the other members do the same thing. I said, well, you know, why would he need a blessing from God when he got your money? And I asked him what kind of car did the pastor drive. He said him and his wife, the pastor and his wife, had a brand new Lincoln and still got a sticker in the window. I said, well, you just had me go outside and help hold up your hood while you put oil in the Chevrolet. And he began to cuss me out, you know, because I was revealing some reality. But anyway, Stanley, I certainly appreciate you for being on, and we're winding down, time's going down. It's time for me to close down this thing, and I want everybody to be back Tuesday night in the Grand National Chairman. We're going to discuss this thing about FEMA and these FEMA camps and these disposable coffins and all of this stuff. And Stanley,
yeah,
thank you for being on. Time for me to go.
All right, man. Appreciate you.
All right. Thanks, bro. You're welcome. Okay, Mose, don't forget, go over to www.tahakapowernomics.net. Get your own business right now. And before you go over there, if you look confused by something, there ain't nothing to be confused about. But give me a shout, and I'll walk you through this thing so you can get it set up, and then you can start networking, making some money, have your own thing. If you got a job, that's fine. Yeah, that's even the more reason why you're able to fuel your own business, get it up off the ground so you can go to work and at the same time have your own business on a business package. But I have been your host, Tahaka Amana LB, and until next time, you all have a good evening. Thank you.